Welcome to another edition of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. We have with us in the studio today, Candace, Ted, and Steve.
Hey.
Part of The Boundless crew.
Good to be back.
Yay, here we are.
So Candace says, good to be back, and the guys both go, hey.
Yeah. We're all moderately cash today because we have some kind of a license to do so at Focus, which is exciting, which just means that the guys don't have to wear ties and I'm in pants. So,
and yet I am exceedingly dressed up for me.
She is.
So our vocal cords are just free awesome. Today.
We're just
no constriction.
We're good to go. But first on the show today, we want to thank those of you who have been providing feedback. First of all, I need to thank
on iTunes,
Mr.
that is, right?
Well, just anywhere.
Oh, okay.
We'll take it from
Email,
any corner.
iTunes.
Yeah, those that have sent the smoke signals, we appreciate you, and the flares and whatnot. No,
all the telegrams. Keep the telegrams coming.
I want to thank Mr. Australia for wanting to help me with my fence, even though he's in Australia. And you know what? If you ever move closer, like within 500 miles, call me.
But so you do think it was just the distance that he said you need a man, not a fan?
I don't know.
He wasn't disqualifying himself, was he?
Well, I don't know. Honestly, I don't try to read anything into these anymore.
There is no distance when it comes to soulmates.
I have guys that are in counseling because of dating me. What?
Distance is irrelevant when it comes to soulmates.
Right. Well, that's soulmates, true. Nice. It's meant to be. But I do need to say, even though I had to thank him for his kind words, I also got a big diss this week on iTunes, our latest review, from someone who not only didn't appreciate a couple of my comments, but quite frankly just said he didn't like my voice. Do we know it was a he? Was it a he?
Wait, was that the Southerner?
Well, you know, who like made...
I think that was a she.
Was it a she?
I thought so.
You know,
well,
what's up
and
with the
concern
women?
Was she didn't like the diss on the South, and Mott and Ted and I representing the Carolinas, we know there's a tender spot
Virginia.
There.
Virginia. And I represent Virginia.
Ted, okay, Virginia. Well, can't you guys just deal with it? I don't
you know.
You know,
I mean, just want to defend Lisa because even though I didn't vocally diss the South, I thought
but you know what? We take enough hard stands that we have to take grief for. Do we really want to take hard stands against geographic regions of our country? When we are the United States, can we get a shout out here about unity in our country?
Oh my God.
People who
I
still
cook.
Everyone now.
Let's everyone stand up and put our hands over
people
our hearts.
People who still
we
cook
have Lee Greenwood
their vegetables.
Right here in the studio.
We don't.
Deep fry your
we
vegetables.
Should.
People who still do things with their vegetables with fat back need to come into the
okay.
current health
Should
century.
We open up, though, on the states that Lisa represents? We've got California and Minnesota. Is there no material there? Is
well,
there no dissing?
There's a lot
Can
of
you talk
material
about
there.
Jesse
if
Ventura
you need to
and
throw
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Down about that, you go ahead and do it, okay? I'm just saying, I made one comment about the South, and I got a big diss about it.
Which did give us a 2-star rating and threw off our average.
Okay, well, in which case, and that's why I need to say that our listeners who are fans who, you know what? Some of these listeners are emailing Ted. They're emailing editor at boundless.org. We've heard good things about the podcast. Some of them have found me on Facebook. Hello, new Facebook friends. Thanks. Shout out. Some of them have found us on Women Praying Boldly, Candace's site. So all
Thank
the girlfriends
you.
There
Thank you, yes.
who have only said kind things about us there and just liking the show.
They
and
They are onto something.
Liking Candace.
But we want to encourage feedback either way, right? We're not...
Well, not really.
You don't have
we just
to.
Want
no,
positive.
No, we
feedback.
Absolutely want to hear from you. Write us.
If, we do.
If you have negative feedback, please email me with it. That editor at boundless.org. That'd be very helpful. It'd help generate change among the team
That's
here.
Right.
But if you have positive feedback, sure, go to iTunes.
Write a review.
Write a review.
Give us some
We just need
stars.
People to write reviews in general, okay?
See, some people don't think star ratings are of any value. However, we do.
Yeah, I mean, it makes or breaks our day around here.
All right,
here
let's go ahead and just confess here. Our paychecks are tied to those star ratings
directly.
And we couldn't buy groceries last week because of that diss.
2-star.
Oh, yeah, now you're going to blame
We've
it on me.
We've had oatmeal every day for lunch thanks to that 2-star.
Well,
so.
And I need
We're
people
kidding.
To just weigh in here on my whole, on my radio voice or whatever it is. Like, what prompted that comment? What's wrong with my voice?
You know, the thing is, Lisa, if you have an awesome voice for radio... You usually have a face for radio to go with it, and you have a decent radio voice and a great face. So,
whereas the rest of us look like
DJs. Nice.
Except Candace. Too.
Okay, well, yes. Ted is saying that if we have the negative feedback, to email him, and
right.
then if you
have the
positive,
I'm very interested
iTunes.
In reading that.
Yes, yeah, we totally yeah. want that. I told everyone here on the team, I'm not into yes men, so I'm all about receiving that negative feedback. However, I do think that if you have negative feedback about me, you need to just come out here and tell it to my face. Okay, I'm just saying. But that is my own personal opinion, and we'll take it to the streets and see what happens there, because Bay Area represent. Don't mess with Lisa A, because she don't play. Okay. So anyway, I'm just saying. But so we're just going to shamelessly say, please post your reviews, hopefully positive. We're just going to say that via iTunes if you can. While we're at it, this week's music is provided by Sovereign Grace, also known as the Charismatic Calvinists. I like referring to them as that, which is awesome. But I love them because, you know, I'm reformed or semi-reformed myself. So glad to meet
Not
that new
enough.
Group of people. No, maybe I'm still working on it. I'm like 3.5 points on the tulip scale. But Sovereign Grace, music from them. So thank you very much to Josh Harris and crew and others who maybe I think it was Ted. Ted just worked it for us. He got us the music. Thanks for
I actually have a history with Sovereign Grace. I've played on a couple of their CDs and did some Pro Tools editing on some others, and have a bunch of friends there and have a high admiration for the work they're doing. Good
well,
stuff.
We admire them even more now that they gave us their music. So yeah. Take a listen to it. Find out more about Sovereign Grace at boundless.org, and you can find out about their music and the CD and whatnot. So do it. We resolve to know nothing else but Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ and Him crucified. We resolve to know nothing else but Jesus Christ, the Lamb of God and our sacrifice. To come to God by are here around the table for our roundtable discussion. Last week we talked about sex. This week we're talking about housework, which is a natural tie-in, a natural follow-up, I think. And I'm just like, my first thought was, what in the world does this have to do with me and or our demographic? But it does. And I think I need to just start out by saying I love to clean, but I would say that I don't really like to clean up after other people. Very good with my own mess, and I actually love to clean, and I love cleaning products, and I have a whole sponge system within my house that is, if I ever do get married, I'm going to have to train that person on the sponge system, because I'm very hardcore about it. But let's throw out, we will say that we did connect with this topic through CNN, which had an article, actually, on distributing housework among spouses, and maybe it's a little bit rose-colored glasses for some singles as far as what their perceptions are of, certainly, you know, we would just split the housework, and that would just, you know, I love doing the dishes, but I don't want to scrub the toilet, so certainly my husband will be willing to do that. What do you think is the, what do you think, first of all, are some of the misperceptions that maybe people who haven't entered marriage have about kind of getting the job done if they need to?
Well, I'd say first and foremost, they have great intentions, that they're thinking, we love each other, we're crazy about each other, that's going to work itself out. But anybody who then starts reading the journals that actually take the time to measure scientifically what gets done and what doesn't get done realizes this is a major issue in marriages, that people have big fights over how you split up the housework. And that's why we're taking the time to bring the issue up.
I think we all learned in college that, one, it's one thing to clean up after yourself, but two, you don't, like Lisa said, you don't want to clean up after other people. And so you get into this practiced habit of saying, okay, we're going to have a chart and you're going to do this job on this week and I'm going to do it on this week. And you get into the mentality of keeping track of who's doing what and making sure it's all equal. And if somebody lets down their end of the bargain, you get really upset with them. The problem is that mentality, it flies in the face of what it means to be married if you're in a Christian marriage, because that's based on sacrificial giving. And if you go into a marriage with this expectation that we're just going to split everything 50-50, you're just doomed for disappointment and let down.
Okay, so Steve and Candace, when you first got married pre-kids, how did you split up the housework?
I'm not sure we even really talked about it. I think on Saturday, we would just spend a couple hours cleaning and we just worked till the job got done. And because we were both working during the week, it made a lot of sense on the weekend to make some time to clean up. It's just that once the kids started coming, everything changed.
Mm-hmm. I will say that I grew up in a house with no sisters, and so we did pick up a lot more cleaning work than I probably would have if we had had sisters and we'd divvied it up differently. And so I jumped in on things that just seemed real, you know, fairly natural to help with. I'd say, and this is something Mott and I have talked about, everybody on the Boundless team, all the guys, talk about how much more we do around the house than our dads did. That we chip in a lot. And, you know, I know chip in sounds kind of token, but that's probably not the right word.
No. You're right. Because when my dad came home from the office, he got a cold drink and laid on the couch and read the paper and took a nap while my mom made dinner and did everything else in the kitchen. Mm. And on the rare occasion when Steve accidentally falls asleep on the couch while I'm making dinner, I notice it, because most nights he is in there helping me, and whether he's playing with the kids so I can cook or he's in the kitchen actually helping, and then even more so after dinner doing the dishes, he pitches in a ton where I know my dad just wasn't even in his thinking.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, and the point of the article is they're saying that guys who do a lot around the house have a better sexual relationship with their wife, and that's the message that shows up in a lot of different studies, a lot of different headlines. And I think it gets out there because it's encouraging guys, hey, if you really do your part, this is good for the relationship.
Okay. Well, Mott has popped in with us for this segment. So Mott, are you saying that the same thing applies within your own house?
What, did housework equal sex?
You know, if you want to weigh in on that aspect of it, feel free.
Like, I pursue my wife. I don't need to do the dishes, too, for her to be interested. Okay. No, but listening to Steve and Candace, I mean, our household is similar. I pitch in. I do my share. And it's for a lot of reasons, because I love my wife. I like an orderly home. She's at home with the kids all day. She's cooking and cleaning. And I actually look forward to it. It's a way that I relieve stress to come home from a busy day from work to be with her in the kitchen, to look after the children, to do the dishes afterward. I actually enjoy it. And like on the weekends, we do that too with kids. You have to sort of get your home back in order.
Yeah. Okay. You know, one thing that comes to mind is that when Steve pitches in to help and I don't have an expectation, it's a real blessing. It's a, you know, it's a deposit in the proverbial love bank. It does warm me up to him on an affection level, at least. And but when I have expectations of, well, I cooked this big meal and, you know, he said he cleaned the kitchen and look at all those pots and pans. They're still in the sink. Who's going to scrub those? Am I going to do them tomorrow at breakfast? And when I start to have that mentality of having an expectation and then it's not met, I could just see that being a major wedge between a couple's intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what Brad Wilcox found when he did a study of traditional families. And there are two different models for how you view marriage. Either egalitarian, where you say we are totally equal, there's nothing distinct about us and gender, and we do all things equal, we split all things equal. Or you have the viewpoint that we're complementarian. We complement each other because God did design us to be different, and we bring things together to become one in that difference. And he said that those who go into the marriage with an expectation of being egalitarian, that they're going to split all things equally, are actually more likely to be disappointed, because the research shows that only a minority actually pull off a fair division of all that labor. But those who go into a relationship expecting it to be complementarian, a little more traditional in nature, where the husband has a primary responsibility for providing and bringing in income, and a wife has more of a primary responsibility for nurturing children and managing a home, that they're the ones who are pleasantly surprised that the other chips in a lot more than they expected them to, whereas those who are expecting equal are more likely to be disappointed because they never pull it off.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you guys are sounding a little bit like overachievers, though. I mean, I'm getting a little bit of a Metro vibe here, like Mott saying that it's stress relief and stuff like that. What about the couple where from the get-go it's just a battle? Like, one person is just messy and does not even have a concept of what a clean house looks like. I mean, how do you... That could be just a source of strife right there. Like for me, I can't stand... I mean, dirt aside, which just drives me nuts, but I can't stand clutter. So what if I marry someone who is just like a pack rat who keeps like newspaper clippings for like 25 years and I'm just freaked out by it? Like, do I have to go to counseling about that, or what is that going to look like?
Well, if he keeps it in the attic, that's not a problem, is it?
No, like on the kitchen counter. Like, I know people that just have stuff scattered all over the place. And
but Lisa, part of that is just the reality of living with another person, that you really are shaping each other and you're stretching each other. And there is difficulty. There is the need to compromise and communicate and all that. And so I think that's part of the reality of God calls us to be in relationship. And relationships are messy. And that's the tangible working out of that is often a home. But it does come down to the philosophy behind it. And that's what we're trying to get at. Is your expectation that you're going to split all the work equally and you're each going to keep a ledger and record all the things you do and balance that out with each other? Or are you going to say, we're going to take on primary responsibilities? And this is especially true when kids come along. That's when the equality thing starts falling apart and your ability to pull it off. But especially in the context of, yes, you're going to have to communicate when you've got different styles. Believe it or not, there are some marriages where it's the husband who keeps a neater home than the wife, who's the one who doesn't like the clutter. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be a communication issue. I think the issue here, though, is what's the expectation? What are we expecting of the other person to do?
Well, and Lisa, I think you might end up in counseling, but you know, the other option, I think if I had a husband who never cleaned up his, you know, his dirty laundry, I'd probably be in therapy right there with you. But thankfully Steve doesn't, he's not a sock on the floor kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But I do think there are issues in marriage where you have to make a decision that you're going to lay down your life. You're going to say, okay, this isn't a major deal breaker. He's a good man. He's a good husband. I'm going to die to myself on this one. And every day I'm going to pick up those socks and I'm going to offer it up as a sacrifice of praise to God to get through that.
But I wouldn't be afraid to bring it up in premarital counseling or even before that. If you notice that your fiance is messy or is disorganized or is not orderly, it's something good to bring up before marriage.
That's right, because you're both compromised and you're both giving of yourself. So as much as you might need to give up some certain amount of control, then your spouse is going to have to give up a certain amount of their habits and personality.
Right. Well, and you can respectfully say, you know, maybe your mom did that for you, but I'm not your mom. Or you can be a real jerk about it and say, look, buddy, I am not that woman. So I think how you approach those touchy issues has a lot to do with it.
Speaking of jerk, I noticed that one of the comments on that article was, well, if the woman's a stay-at-home mom, she should do it all. She did all the cleaning, all the cooking. And I kind of see it as the opposite. If a woman is staying home and taking care of the kids and doing all that, she's going to be more exhausted than I am after I come home from work. That's for sure. So
woohoo, Mott. Now that's a worldview I can live with.
Well, I think that's kind of my question then is, so when really what's the reality of this conversation taking place? Is it before marriage, and how serious of a conversation is it? Because I know singles who, you know, are kind of including on their lists of criteria, you know, I would have to marry someone who's organized, or I would have to because they're so used to it. So, you know, I could see a guy who, you know, if you come home every day and you don't really have much to clean up because you're just, you know, eating takeout or whatever, and all of a sudden you do have kids and it's like, where did all these toys come from? You know, I didn't have these scattered around when I was single. It could be a little shocking. So when does that wake-up call
happen?
Well,
see, it comes in the context of expectations that, and there are some great assessment tools out there that help couples unpack what their expectations are of the other person. Because like I said, during the romantic phase, you have this glossy perception of the other person and you have the sense that everything's going to work out well. Then when you get married, you realize this is maybe 50% of the life of a marriage is going through the routine of making meals and making messes that have to be cleaned up. And then, like I said, it just gets that much more complicated when kids come along. Mm-hmm. And so the thing is to begin with the sense of we're going into a marriage that's going to have real life stuff. And we can't be blind about it. We can't be naive about it. We can't just assume the best of the other person. This is an expectation issue. And there is a philosophy behind it in terms of how you relate to each other and what your expectation is.
And some division of labor is okay. Like my brother-in-law loves to cook, so he does a lot of the cooking. I don't like to pick stuff up off the ground. There's something about just bending over, and it's just too difficult.
Are you kidding me?
I like counter height, cleaning.
He does the counter messes.
I do the counter messes, vacuuming.
Poor Beth when she's
You know, might they have those grabber things?
You know, Lisa, one thing I will say is the longer you're single, the harder this working out gets, because you have had a decade or two decades or maybe even three decades of learning how to keep it all neat and keep it all organized and have everything on your terms and on your schedule. And so, yeah, if you've been single a long time, be prepared. This is going to be a bit of a shock and a bit of an adjustment, but it's an essential one.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd say, too, that if you – going back to the complementarian model that says that God has designed – men, and he calls them to be providers. I mean, there's a scripture that says, you know, if you're not providing for your family, you're worse than an unbeliever. And men do carry that responsibility. And even though in a lot of marriages, women contribute to that provision, they shouldn't have to bear all the burden and headaches and weight and responsibility of doing all the providing. But if a man's going to take on that responsibility, anything his wife can do to invest in him to be a good provider just buoys him and encourages him. Well, the reverse is also true. If his wife makes the sacrifices and loses some of the identity and perks and benefits she can get in the workplace to be a primary provider of nurture and care for children and to manage a home and maybe even still trying to squeeze some provision in there somewhere, then obviously anything he can do to invest in her role and to take a load off of her and her trying to take on that primary responsibility is great for everybody concerned.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and I think, too, to go to the other end of the spectrum, I think it is also healthy for people to, you know, I think a lot of singles can go into relationships with blinders on to the stuff that's, like, really scary. Like the, you know, I mean, if you're dating someone and he has food, like, falling out of his sofa, or you're dating someone and she has, true story, she has to display her 350 Barbies around her house.
Yo.
You need to, like, work on those. I mean, yeah, I think people just kind of, like, leave that, you know, they just kind of gloss over that. And they're like, well, surely they wouldn't care about that, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden it becomes a hill that people are dying on. I mean, squalor, we do not support that, people. If the Department of Health has to come in, I don't think so. So work that out beforehand and don't just pass over it, you know, because, other friends, they're just so awesome. So, well, good discussion. This will be good. Y'all will have to come over to my house, and maybe you can help me work through some of my cleanliness issues and what can go and what can't. But I'm just saying, I will die on the sponge issue, just FYI.
I mean, seriously, people hire feng shui consultants, but they don't hire marriage housework adjustment consultants.
Yeah.
Where the real stuff happens.
That's a niche industry right there that could just be started. If anyone
Wait,
starts
so we're
going
to have a convo about the sponges, because I just see them as homes for bacteria.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, you just microwave them.
Oh.
Like, microwave them and it kills everything. It's totally awesome. Yeah. And,
well, that's
anyway.
The next episode. Well,
that's obviously our next roundtable is just home cleaning methods. So, yeah, well, we'll go ahead and deal with that next time. This week for our culture segment in the studio, I have with me, again, The Return of, this is the sequel to the sequel. So kind of like Indiana Jones, it's Bob Waliszewski and the legend or the kingdom of what? Not the crystal skull, but the, I don't know.
This is plugged in four.
There you go.
This is the plugged
Redux.
In four broadcast.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me today,
Lisa.
In the studio, because of course we want to talk about a new slate of stuff that's out in the theaters, because I went with my niece and nephew this past weekend to go see Kung Fu Panda, which was a lot of fun. We had a good time. My niece is taking, how do you say it, karate. So we went and saw that, but it looks like we're looking at the top movies this weekend, having been Get Smart, Kung Fu Panda, The Incredible Hulk, which I didn't even realize was out yet. What in the world? And then like The Love Guru and stuff. So kind of give us a summary of what you think kind of people need to be aware of.
Well, I'll start with number two as well, Kung Fu Panda. Like you, I liked it. I took my 20-year-old daughter to see that.
Aww.
And I can't say how many times I've heard her going to friends of hers like, I love this movie. So for those who think, listening today and say, yeah, that's all right if I was married and had a 7-year-old, but I'm single, I'm 23, and you're not speaking to me. And I want to say, yep, I'm speaking to you. Uh-huh. Go see Kung Fu Panda. It's cute. It's one of those movies that you're just not going to have to say, I'm going to have to just close my eyes at this scene or cover my ears, because it's just a cute movie. And
I think those with a healthy Christian worldview don't have to be afraid of like turning Taoist or anything as a result of watching it.
I actually wondered, though, how significant the Eastern meditation message was going to be in this film. Because from the previews, from the trailer, it looked like it could be a little heavy-handed, but it turned out not to be the case. And in fact, what's little bit is there, I think one can say the cartoonish nature of the overall film pretty much gives it a pass that way as well. And then other people, if we're talking to parents who say, yeah, but the, you know, Kung Fu Pan, it sounds like it's going to be really, really violent. Well, yeah, there's a lot of Kung Fu action sequence, but the only person that dies doesn't die from a Kung Fu fight in the entire movie. And those that are involved in the Kung Fu, it's hardly, again, it's cartoonish. It's hardly, there's no blood. And
right.
And so anyway, it's kind of,
well, I was actually able to, in my Sunday school class, in which we're studying the Book of Judges, I was able to make a parallel to Kung Fu Panda.
I need to hear that, because now of all the things I've heard.
Maybe I'll have to say something further on
messages I missed there, but that's okay. We'll have to do that off.
Exactly.
Off
I was able to apply it. Maybe I'll write a Bible study related to it or something. We can go there.
Okay, let's go. Get Smart, number one movie last week.
Yes.
It grossed $39 million, which was above what most critics thought the movie would take. I gave it a 2.5 out of 5 for family friendliness, which kind of puts it in that D+, C- category. Not a strong recommendation, yet not a strong absolutely don't go. There's some crude humor. And the movie, quite frankly, doesn't know, and this is the director's fault, doesn't really know whether it wants to be a James Bond actioneer or a comedy spoof on like the television show itself was, that I believe aired from 1965 to 1970. So I'm not sure the director did this movie the greatest. Anyways, enough said on that one. Incredible Hulk, pretty similar. I think I gave it a 2.5 out of 5 is what I recall. And the reason is the body count is pretty high and the violence, you know, you know what you're going to get into. But yet at the same time, there's a lot about that movie I liked. The Love Guru, which made $14 million last week, which I'm happy to say was something like $10 million below expectations, even though it's $14 million, is just one crude, rude gag after another. In fact, we say in our conclusion to our review,
In fact, gag-inducing as they rely upon continual references to sex, male genitalia, urine, and flatulence. I think that's, I've said enough about what I think about that particular movie.
Oh, great.
Movie.
Now you've just sold it to Mott and Steve.
Sorry, guys.
I saw the trailer to that because it was the preview before some film I saw. I can't remember what. I honestly did not know what was going on. Like, it was such a, I mean, it's like a psychedelic trip down, I don't know what. I mean, it didn't sound to me like it had any kind of plot. So I was just like, no interest.
Yeah, well, and that's a good way to be. Even when the trailer doesn't grab your interest, and then from what I just told you, I would say, and for our listeners, hopefully this doesn't grab your interest. You're like, okay, and cross that one off my list.
Right.
So
what do we have? Like, what can we anticipate this summer that is coming out that we can look forward to?
Well,
still, is there anything
on the East and West Coast last week? A movie came out, Kit Kittredge, An American Girl, rated G. It comes to wide release in July 2nd, so all of us can see it. And it's based on the American Girl dolls, of which many of our listeners probably played with when they were girls, if they're female, or watched their sisters if they were male, if they have a sister. And when I went to screen this one, I thought, there is no way I'm going to like this film. You know, the doll angle just wasn't getting me. But it was set in the Depression era, and it's a little bit Nancy Drew, and it surprised me. I thought the script was well written, and the movie grabbed me. And not only do I like the movie, I recommend this movie, and not just for little girls. I think... not that I think it's going to be a great movie for the junior high school set. Don't get me wrong. But if parents who are dragging their kids to see a movie because that's what they want to do are thinking, I'm just absolutely going to hate it, I'm going to say, no, you're going to be in for a mild surprise. You're going to sit back with as your kids are watching, and you're going to like this too. You know, now, I wouldn't pay the $9 if it wasn't for, if I didn't have kids in that age demographic. It's not a date night type movie is what I'm trying to say. But again, for parents with kids who just think, do I just drop them off or do I go? Go ahead and go. You'll enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Or for Boundless listeners who can bring their nieces and nephews.
Absolutely.
And
we, all know that we're just, you know, when you look at the marquee and you go up there and you say, okay, Sex in the City, Don't Mess with the Zohan, and here I'm tagging along my niece and nephew and they're 8, they're 10, they're 12. What do I go see? It's nice to have a Kung Fu Panda or looking forward to a Kit Kittredge.
Though, I think our listeners should know that if they go and see the Kit Kittredge, they will leave the movie theater having to buy an American Girl doll. And
probably
all the
$100
and fly to Manhattan and go and get the tea party, whatever, which is like $350 or something. So it's just a whole marketing
scheme.
Is that
a racket or what?
It's ridiculous.
How come we didn't think of that?
I don't know. It's ridiculous. Maybe we'll have to do something with Adventures in Odyssey that's similar.
There you go.
Like the action figures or something. Well, thanks for the insight, Bob. This was
absolutely
good.
So once again, privilege to be on your program.
Good roundup for everyone. So, hopefully we'll take this advice to heart as we make our media and entertainment choices in the coming weeks. So.
Yep. And by the next time we talk, we'll be talking about Hancock and some of the other films that are coming out later on the summer that a lot of people are going, ha-ha, what do we think are coming down the pike?
All right. We'll look forward to it.
Okay.
It was your grace that drew me to the cross. It was your grace that gave me faith.
For this week's take on The Hungry Years, Patrick Dunn tells us how acne and singleness can sometimes breed the same insecurities.
Remember the shock, the terror, and disbelief of your first pimple? You stared, spent hours in front of the mirror, did almost anything to hide it. The way too much makeup thing, the Band-Aid trick, where you told everyone, yeah, my dog scratched me, but you only had goldfish. Or, like, the fake beard. I'm celebrating rabbi days, aren't you? And if you decided, whatever, I don't care, you know you did. Anytime you looked in the mirror or talked to someone, you thought about the pimple. Well, that's how being single can feel sometimes. You try to ignore it, cover it up, make excuses, but it's always there, lurking. Here's part of an email from a girl I know. Basically, she's venting to her sister and has her top five issues about being single. I'll give you her issues and a few of my own thoughts. Number one from her, something happened when I turned 23. I ooze singleness. Anyone and everyone is currently trying to set me up with anyone and everyone. Oh, he's male. He's perfect. Oh, he goes to church. He's perfect. Well, here's the thing. When girls are being set up, your friends and family are usually thinking he would be great for her, or they would be such a cute couple. When this starts happening to a guy, it's usually because someone feels sorry for you. Number two, creepy men think that one thing in common is grounds for asking you out on a date. Now, girls, you laugh, but guys are in a tough spot. You know, we're supposed to be the pursuer, but this is major pressure. And I know there's guys out there that have made pursuing a hobby and kind of left out the commitment part. Or there's other guys that could earn a degree in pickup lines. But most of us are just the opposite. We have no idea what to say to a girl we're interested in. Sometimes that one thing in common, it's all we've got to strike up a conversation. Heh, I see you're eating food. Yeah, I need food too. It's crazy how God gave us both teeth. I was proud of myself for actually saying anything to a girl I was interested in. And after all that effort, you hate to think you've been filed into the creepy guy box. Number three, meeting desperate men. When guys turn 23, they all of a sudden feel rushed to find a spouse. Avoid these men at all costs. You know, this is scary for all of us. And guys, we've all met the girl whose biological clock is ticking. Number four, single comments from Dad. He must think I'm pathetic. And you know, there is a point in everyone's life where they know their parents are starting to worry about them. And really, this is one of them. The years pass, you're still not in a serious relationship, but Mom smiles and says, "That's okay, dear. It's all in God's timing, right?" Yet her thoughts are racing. What did we do wrong? I knew we shouldn't have moved into the country. Maybe it was the superhero pajamas. Number five, hearing the never-ending question, "Are you dating anyone?" "No?" Oh, well. We all know how it feels to smile and say, "No, not right now." But inside, our thoughts are racing. What's wrong with me? Was it the superhero pajamas? But really, being single is frustrating. It is like that pimple. It's so hard to avoid. You see couples everywhere. You're caught playing the "how did that person get someone" game. Or you start wondering, what's wrong with me? I mean, for a while, I was convinced somehow that I was secretly crowned the Czar of Nerds, or emitted some strange, high-pitched shriek that only girls could hear. Sure, you can take the "I have more time for Jesus" approach. And really, some of the most powerful times in my life were when it was just God and me, and I couldn't use relationships as a crutch and a way to fill me. But even then, I still wished I was with someone. Or you can decide, I don't need anyone. I have plenty of friends in my online world. But here's the thing. Hanging out with your alter ego Sims avatar or spending hours as one of Warlord Zargator's freedom fighters online, it doesn't really count. And since we've been divinely created for relationship, it can be tough to be alone. Really, being single seems like one of life's great mysteries. I mean, some of your friends will say, just let it go and trust God's timing, while others tell you it's your duty to find a mate. Get her done! Here's all I know. God is God, and he can do whatever he wants. After years of being single, I married. Of course, someday my children will graduate from high school, see me in the stands, and yell, "Grandpa's here!" I mean, I don't understand why things turned out the way they did. There was a lot of growth, a lot of adventure I probably couldn't have had if I married early, and also a few train wrecks. But when I look at where I'm at and who he eventually placed into my life, it was all worth it. And I pray you'll be able to say the same thing someday if you're single, even if right now you feel like you did when you saw that first pimple.
In you a strength to sustain me, and wisdom enough to guide my hand, mercy enough to forgive me, and power to finish what you began.
Opening up this week's Boundless Inbox, I have Candace in the studio with me to address a question from Michelle, one of our listeners. And this is kind of interesting. I think I'm going to read her question, and then I'm just going to have to give a big what? But you guys will probably understand as I read this.
And then I'll give a big answer.
And we'll do the whole thing in various song tones. That's awesome. Okay, this is what she says. The following is a common sentiment among my girlfriends and me. We want to marry godly Christian men, but why would godly Christian men want to marry us? Okay, that's just sad. I'm editorializing there. I've wrestled with the perception that if I wasn't me, I wouldn't want to date me. I'm a growing Christian, but I don't know at which point in my Christian walk I'm supposed to be ready for marriage. I'm recently graduated from college with a full-time job and an apartment, so I think I'm mostly prepared to take on the practical issues of marriage. But I don't know if I'm spiritually ready to marry. It seems as if I'm only capable of attracting committophobes or spiritually dwarfed men. Dis. I've heard that you attract the type of person you are, and if that's true, then I have a lot of work to do. But if I wait until I'm perfect, I'll never be ready for marriage. Where is that line, and how do I get to it? And so I guess my follow-up question is just, are we talking about her here? Like what? Yeah, I'm just like, what?
It's a little confusing.
I think we need to tackle both issues here. What is she perceiving about herself versus what she's perceiving about the men that are attracted to her based on that? So Candace, go for it, because we need
help.
This
is a bit of a quagmire, Lisa.
It is.
Quagmire. Michelle, I guess I would just start by saying, is this the Holy Spirit prompting you? Is this conversation you're having in your head something that the Lord is leading you to think about because you have some serious character flaws that you need to work on? You know, is this God's way of trying to get your attention and say, look, if you met yourself somewhere, would you like yourself? Okay, so that's one option. Another option is that you are too focused on yourself. This whole question is about you. And I would encourage you to take the focus off of yourself and start to put it on the Lord and start to put it on others. Stop worrying so much about how you perceive yourself and how you think others perceive you, and start thinking about what others need from you and practice being unselfish, practice being other-centered. Another thing I would ask is, what are you doing to get ready for marriage? Because it does sound like, as far as your developmental stage of life goes, you know, you're post-college, you've got a job, you have an apartment. And then finally, I just think that it's... Your whole approach to this question really is all about you, and it needs to be more outwardly focused on not only what am I going to bring to a marriage and how am I going to be a good wife, but what does God have in mind for marriage, and what role are you going to play, and how are you going to be, you know, a contributor in that, and then nurturing friendships with men who you think are on the same page.
I think I would just add, too, that, you know, maybe there's just time, Michelle, for a reality check. I mean, I think if we look at, you know, because this is the experience of myself and my girlfriends, there are sin patterns that have bred a cultural singleness in our culture. And I think you can be a growing, godly woman, and you are going to come up against some commitment phobes and some whatever. And there are a lot of women out there that have got all kinds of issues, too. And I think we're just almost in this malaise that is so unfortunate. And I think that's why... Candace, your book is so helpful. You know, it gives women things to do to begin, like you said, to start praying, to join a church, to get others on your side, to, you know, to really take a spiritual perspective on things to counteract what has gone so spiritually wrong in our society. And I think, you know, not to be totally discouraging or anything, but I think there are so many women out there, especially, who are like, everything, the perception that they have about themselves is that they're either too something or they're not enough something. Yeah. And that's what they're being told by the culture and by the men that they date and whatever. And it's, you know, I'm too strong. I'm too opinionated. I'm too independent, or I'm not
right.
kind enough. I'm not sweet enough. I'm not demure. Well, let me walk through my biography right here.
That gets back to what is the standard. And here's where something, Michelle, you can start doing right now is pray, God, how do you see me? What is your perspective on me? Because at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter how you see yourself or how the people you know see you. It matters how you're relating to the Lord and how he sees you. And two, to say, quit being so negative on the guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're wanting a relationship with a man. And instead of talking about how dysfunctional they are or broken, start praying for them to get healthy and start encouraging them and being, you know, be a bit of a cheerleader for the men in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, I mean, I just say throw the whole thing back on the Lord and just say, God, you know, you need to start more directly telling me, you know, if there are things in my life, you know, that need to be shored up or things I need to work on, then show me. But beyond that, I just have to rely, you know, I'm relying on you and trusting you to bring a man along that, you know, will stand up and
right. Open yeah. the doors.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, thank you, Candace, for weighing in on that.
Oh, you're welcome. Always
fantastic.
A pleasure.
Fantastic. So, okay, well, we want to hear from you folks, editor@boundless.org. Of course, all of our questions come from you. We cannot make them up on our own. So please write to us so we have fodder for future inbox segments. We love to hear from you. Give us your questions, comments, and concerns. Again, this week, you've been hearing from Sovereign Grace. They have been providing the music. So we want to, again, just give a shout out to them and thank them for their participation in this podcast. And hopefully we'll hear more from them in the future and more independent bands as they come down the pike and others. So that is it for this week's show. We appreciate you being with us. Please join us again next time. The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. We will see you next week.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.